17th, and we're going to begin by Windsor reading the release form.
I hereby give to the Buffalo Women's Oral History Project the tapes recorded on July 17th, 1980, for such educational and scholarly uses and purposes of the directors, Elizabeth Kennedy, Madeline Davis, and Avril Michelson shall determine. I further consent to the transcription and publication of any or all of this interview, as educational and scholarly work require. I have been assured that only my first name will be employed in any use of these tapes. I understand that at some future date, the tapes will be housed in the archive chosen by the directors of the Buffalo Women's Oral History Project and will be available for public access governed by the rules of the archive. I give consent that these tapes be made available for research purposes. As many years after... How do you want to say that?
Well, we didn't discuss that, did we?
One year. After the date of the last interview, sure. Because you might get lucky and write it all in one...
Usually by asking if, knowing that we're writing a book of the lesbian community and the history of the lesbian community, what do you think, just as you think about it, and I'm sure you've thought about it, is the most important things that we have to make sure that we include?
In the history? Boy, do I got a minute to think about that?
You can think as long as you want. Tape is not a question, so you can think, and then we can...
The most important thing? I think probably the most important thing that... What was the question?
To include in the history of... When we write a history of the book, and yet... I think probably,
rather than the pains that one has experienced, or the social ostracism, probably the joys and the opportunities that there are for an individual... For a person, not for a sex, male or female.
Anything else? It doesn't have to be one thing, is what I mean. You can think of several things.
That's important. I think one of the things that would have been important in my life, and I think is important for people younger than myself and even my peers. Is to understand children. If you've never been, but then most people have children or are around them. I was an isolated case, so I can't speak for the community. But I lived in a very gay environment.
Mm-hmm.
All of my friends were gay.
Mm-hmm.
The people who had, there was only one friend, longtime friend, 15 years, that had children, and she kept her children away from us. Not because she didn't like us, but because she had enough of the kids through the week. But that would have been, and I only got to know her son after he was grown up. And that's one of the things I'm sorry about, because I don't know anything about kids.
Right. It is true. You can get isolated really easily.
And another thing, but this isn't happening today, so it's. But I didn't have straight friends. Because, Ruth, I came down here and she, I knew no one here. So I met all of her friends who were gay. And then the only way I could meet straight people was at work, and you don't mix work and your personal life. So I didn't have straight friends. And that was bad for me. As a consequence, I didn't feel... I was lonely, I was isolated, because the only people, even up until, I would say, this year, and I'm 43 now, I could only be comfortable, say, going into a gay bar or a party where there were, well, of course, the only people that would invite me, not only, but usually, the only people who invited me to parties were gay people. That's very limiting. Very. And now I just want to just know everybody. Really, I don't know any men. That's another thing. I've never had a straight male friend. I have one now that I've met in the last 5 years since Ruth died, and that's been good. But he lives far away, so I don't get to see him very much.
So you would say that we should be able to capture the old-time isolation of gay people?
Oh, yeah.
That was ice.
Yeah, because I think they did separate. Well, where do people meet straight people? Through their family, and then usually... And there's another thing, is when you live in a closet... I could never live like that, Liz.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I came out today at work. And I'm glad I did. I don't know how far it will go in work, but I'm out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It sometimes doesn't go far at all. It just goes. Mm-hmm. That's it. And people know and you feel better.
Yeah, I think the kids, because I'm one of the senior employees, the kids like me. And they know I'm 43 and I'm not married. And I joke about sex enough so they know I'm doing something. But they never come right out and say, where's your boyfriend or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to deal with that.
Okay, now the other thing, that we start with these general questions just so we get some beginning.
Mm-hmm.
When you look back, now, true, you haven't been out beyond, when did you come out, 1960?
About 59, I think.
59. Well, when you look back, and maybe you want...
Maybe even 58, Liz.
Maybe even 58. Uh-huh. That, what do you see as the turning points in, or the big changes in the gay community? When did you see them occur? Or did you see any changes?
I didn't see them because until 5 years ago I wasn't in the... I was in a very segregated gay community, which was just my neighbors. Personal friends.
And you didn't think there were any changes that occurred in there?
Uh-uh. I started going back to the bar 5 years ago.
And amongst your personal friends, it was like it was the same all the time. There weren't any big changes that occurred.
They did. I'm sure there were changes for them, but they moved away.
Mm-hmm.
They moved down to New Jersey and to Buffalo and things like that, so I didn't have as much contact with them. And I was going through grief, too, so I didn't seek people out.
Mm-hmm. Well, then the last question that's kind of general is, looking back at your own life, what do you see as the important turning points in your own life, or the landmarks in your own life?
Well, I think the biggest landmark for me was that that through the gay bar. No, I'm telling a lie. It was through a great gay friend I met Ruth Rebell.
Uh-huh.
I got to know her socially in the bar, just talking to her.
Which bar?
Not talking to her. That was in the carousel.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't come out that often. I was down here maybe from Toronto, maybe twice a month. And she might be out once a month. And if I saw her in the bar, I gravitated towards her. And she would let me talk and listen to me. And then she... We eventually became lovers. I didn't expect that. Never even dreamt of it.
Uh-huh.
Because she was such a... She was 20 years older. And she had such a... God, such a universal mind. Never thought of it, that she would ever be interested in me. But she saw... I think she saw potential, and she brought it out. And through knowing her, because I went to high school till I was, I failed grade 10, because I was hostile. I had to leave school by the time I was 16 to go to work, and I was really hostile, so I just failed grade 10. And then I met Ruth when I was, we got involved when I was 22, and she said I could take New York State equivalency, which they didn't have in Canada.
Ah, they didn't have a high school equivalency.
Mm-hmm. But then I had life experiences from 16 till 20.
Right.
So I passed the New York State equivalency and went to Millard Fillmore. So that was a super opportunity.
And that was a big turning point in your life then. And what about turning points after that as big landmarks?
After Ruth, me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would say a big...
Well, one big turning point must have been when she died, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were you two still together when she died?
Mm-hmm. There has to be. One of the things that I would remind people of is if you go into business with someone else, whether you're a partner or whether you're just working together, you're spending 24 hours a day with that person, and that is. That is so, for me, was so detrimental to our relationship. That was horrible. And secondly, Liz, another turning point for me was I started to drive when I was 30. And I think every woman should drive and have her own car. Mm-hmm. Or her own transportation, whatever it is, a bike, whatever. And they should have their own circle of friends. And be tied by the, what is it? Tied by the strings that do not bind?
Yeah. And so then after Ruth's death, what were the turning points or big important things in your life?
The turning point was that when Ruth died, I met a straight woman who was about, say, 10 years younger than I. Very good mind. And I was able to open up with her. And she told me things about straight women and their relationship with men and their emotions and things that I didn't know anything about. I didn't know that straight people had feelings like that. Like me.
Uh-huh.
And they have the same feelings. And that was super. That was the best relationship, I would say, for me. Turning point.
And she was a friend, or was she also a lover?
Friend. Okay. And we had a sort of a physical attraction, but it was not a, it was subliminal thing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It was complementary to our relationship. But we didn't explore it.
And then since then, what are there any important turning points?
Since Stella? Yeah, I was Oh, I was unemployed. That was another thing, because after I sold the land, I was unemployed. And at the time, I thought, I'm fine. I didn't know what unemployed felt like, so I wasn't even concerned when it happened. But then I was unemployed for about a year, and I realized how important it is to work, to find a job. And being in the same job for 15 years, I had no experience in anything else. So when you're in the job market, it's a very, especially my field, not especially my field, any field. If you've been in any field for 15 years, what else? Who can you market yourself to? So I think, I want to change my career. When I took aptitude testing at UB in 62 or something, my strength was social sciences. However, the lab satisfied with the patient exchange, it satisfied that need I had to take care of people.
Mm-hmm.
So that the lab was good. But now,
we can turn it off.
Okay.
Are there any other turning points that you wanted to mention
about your life? Job business, yeah. Into the job. Yeah, so anyway, now I want to get back into, I met Jeannie, what's her last name? And I heard a little bit about the women's studies program. And I was always interested in that.
Is she a printer, Jeannie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know who she is.
I was always interested in that movement up at UB, but I didn't get, and I was drinking, so I was drinking until, there's a major thing in my life. I stopped drinking a year ago.
Oh, that's a big thing.
Oh, that's been fantastic, because I've really gotten in touch with my own feelings. And also discovered a heck of a lot of things that I haven't dealt with. But I'm getting professional help for it. And professional help because they're paid to listen. My friends, I want to give my friends my joys.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the things, other things about myself might involve other people in the community. But I don't want, I respect them as people. So I don't have to discuss it with anyone else.
Uh-huh.
That's very important. And also I found out that there's all kinds of professional help available. All kinds of it.
Right, that's true.
Regardless of what income you have.
Right.
And there's absolutely nothing to be ashamed of it. In one's life, nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's
that's
nothing to be guilty of it.
Uh-huh.
And that's important.
Okay, so let's go back as we're trying to get a history to when you came out in 58. How'd you come out?
I was in a straight bar with a fellow I worked with, not a date, fellow I worked, good friends. And the entertainer finished her set and came down and sat at our table, started to talk to us. Uh-huh. And we were flattered, etc. We went back and then finally, and she was, I didn't realize it, but she was interested in me. And then she invited us to a party that weekend. And then she started moving on. And we started necking with her, and it was great. I was so happy.
And you started what with her?
She started necking with her.
Oh, yeah.
I was so happy. I was engaged.
You were engaged.
Before, I was engaged, and I was 18 or 19 or something. And every Friday night, twice a week, I'd go to two different girlfriends' house to sleep the night. I'd get in the bed, and I'd start to shake. Liz, I'd be shaking, and I didn't know why, and I loved it, but I would have, not intercourse with Don, but manipulation, so.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like
going to your friend's house. How long before you actually met this entertainer were you aware that you had some feelings?
Oh, from the time I was a kid.
From the time you were a kid.
Yeah, but I disputed it. I was, and my brother was in the, I copied my brother. My father and I had this, and my mother used to always say, introduce me, this is my wee son. And I always felt kind of like a little butch.
Uh-huh.
When I was, even though I was small, I was feminine, but inside I felt kind of like a person, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
But I'd know identified with that male and not wearing a shirt. And I still don't wear a shirt.
When you can, huh?
Oh, sure, around here. We were laughing today because my dad was sunbathing on Sunday with no top on. And I was telling the kids at work, and one of the girls said something about your father. I said, hey, he's seen me like that for years because he nursed me.
Right. Yeah. So, but when you had those feelings before you ever met this entertainer, you didn't know what they were. Did you have any idea what they were?
Oh, sure. I mean, I knew I was attracted to him. I used to write them love letters. I used to write poems to school teachers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was wonderful. Really. I must have been a nice little kid. I mean, you can see kids when they like you. And I think every teacher must be complimented when they see little kids shining right up to them. Oh, yeah. They must love it. Oh, yeah, and I liked a lot. I liked women. I liked women.
But you never thought of yourself as being a lesbian or being gay, or did you?
The word wasn't even...
known.
No, it wasn't known, no. So I met a lesbian. I met a lesbian who was interested in my future mother-in-law. And I was jealous of her.
Is that right?
Yeah, I was jealous of her because she was... And then my mother-in-law, future mother-in-law, was having a thing with one of her friends, and I was jealous of that.
Did you consciously know that she had relationships and stuff? Did she ever discuss it with you? Or
they used to neck. These two, my future mother-in-law and her friend would be there, and then she would, like, one would kiss the other, and then I think my mother-in-law said to me, kiss her. Well, hell, I couldn't stand her. I was jealous of her. There's no way I was going to kiss her. That's weird, isn't it?
But did you ever think of yourself as being... did you ever discuss it with your mother-in-law that you might feel like she felt or anything like that? Never.
No.
Did you ever go out and look for to act on it or to meet a woman who you might have a relationship with?
No.
Never.
Uh-uh.
Until you met this entertainer, huh?
Yeah.
What kind of entertainer was she?
She was a singer. She was about 20. And she was all kind of made up with stage makeup and stuff, and she wasn't my kind of woman.
Uh-huh.
But then when she came down off the stage and she sat with us, she was fun. She was a person, you know, you just didn't see the makeup.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Was she a more feminine type or a more butch type?
No, she was... The thing is, she was really just a person. On stage she was wearing a gown, but then at the party and stuff like that, she was in shorts and jeans and stuff. Well, it wasn't jeans in those days, but...
And did you two just have an affair, or did you get into a relationship?
So we met, and then eventually, at that party, I met other gay people. And that was good. And then eventually she made oral love to me. Eventually, I don't know.
A few weeks later?
Yeah. But I had that experience when I was 16 with a male that I loved. But I loved him, but it was not a sexual thing. Physically, I was, what's the word? I wasn't developed physically.
At 16?
No. But I loved him, and he was my teacher. He was my mentor. He was 21. Uh-huh. And the important thing he taught me was, he said, if man didn't have a sex drive, he would have children anyway. I'd like to forget that thing.
You'd like to take it off?
No, I want to finish it, but I'd just like to forget it.
Oh, okay.
So that was what he taught. He said, if man didn't have a sex drive, he would have children anyway because his ego is so involved. So when I was living, I would think about kids from time to time, and I like kids. As most, I think all people like children.
Right.
And I was in a gay situation, and there was no opportunity to have a child.
Right. I know. I feel that way. I think we discussed it, didn't we? That I always had wanted kids, and I think I feel very torn up by the loss of not having them.
But then I don't think too. Well, thank God Tom told me that, because I never got into a marriage. I was engaged to be married to a gay man at one point. We had a very good friendship. And we were doing well because we both like kids.
Was this in 58 or?
This was before I lived with Skip, so this would be, I'd be about 20 at the time. In fact, I think I got engaged on about my 21st birthday. I think I was engaged at that.
Was that a marriage of convenience, so that you could each go your own ways, or were you?
And we were planning on having kids. But then I came down to it, and I thought, he became very chauvinistic about I shouldn't have other male friends. Well, I had Bruce as a friend since I'd been 16, and I couldn't be seen with Bruce because I was engaged to him. It was cool. Everybody knew that Bruce and I were friends, and that we were both gay. So who was he trying to impress? Because the people we worked with all knew that Al and I were gay, and that Bruce and I were gay. So it was stupid.
Well, let's get back to 58 and this woman entertainer. Did you, after she made love to you, did you think that now, did you enter your mind that you were gay then?
Oh, yeah. Straight ahead.
Straight ahead.
Yeah. I moved out of house and home.
Right after the first time you were with this woman.
Yeah.
Right after.
Oh,
that,
yeah. Huh? Yeah. Because at that party, I met another gay woman. And then she had given me a phone number. And I didn't see Ellen for 2 or 3 days after the party because she was sick. But I talked to this other gay woman. And this other gay woman was playing games that she wasn't gay. But she and Ellen had an affair, which I didn't know about. So anyway, she was living in a flat, and I asked her if
you could move in.
Yeah, she said sure. She said sure. So I lived with her for about 3 or 4 months.
As friends or as lovers?
Neither.
Because
I couldn't stand her.
Oh, but no. She was just a way to get
but
out
it was
of
way
your house.
Yeah. Huh. And then.
So then were you part of the, was this in Toronto?
Yeah.
And so that would make you part of the Toronto community.
Right, yeah.
Was that a big gay community?
I didn't, no.
Wasn't it?
No, I mean, I don't know what big means. Because you meet certain people and you gravitate towards them. There's only, 4 weekends a month. So
right,
how often are you going to meet people?
That's true. Did you go to bars?
I was too young though. I was only 20. And you have to be 21 to drink.
You couldn't. So what kind of things would you all do? Picnics, parties, what things like that?
House parties. I did go to the bars. And Letros, which is a well-known, I don't know if I'll tell you the same. Letros is a very well-known, the oldest gay bar in Toronto. And the clientele are all very top drawer. And this was then.
would be men and women, or men?
Men. But women could go there. Mm-hmm. But to get into this, the downstairs room, you almost had to be with somebody.
Mm-hmm. Or, be with a guy.
It's sort of, you know, they could mm-hmm. Make it difficult for you. So anyway, I went down with some gay men, maybe another woman, I don't know. But just I remember just being with men. And I was a feminine girl. And the waiters were in red jackets and black ties, etc. And trying to think of his name, Conrad, came over to the table and he had a drink, stem glass with was flaming. And he said, he offered it to me and he said, "That's from the gentleman over there." And of course, you don't accept a drink from a stranger in those days. And I was avoiding it. And the kid said, "No, do it. It's a custom here when there's a feminine woman or whatever. That's what they do." So there was two or three fellows sent over drinks, which was really sweet. They were called Flaming Virgins.
Flaming Virgins.
Isn't that sweet?
Yes. Yes.
It's adorable, yeah.
So this would be way back in 58, that time that you were living with Ellen in that apartment and stuff. So did you think of yourself as coming out, or wasn't that a concept that you had?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was opening a door. It was fantastic.
You felt it as a relief?
Definitely. Because the thing is, you know, parents, I had been involved in sexual activity since I was with Tom. And then I met Don Tom left when I was 17. And then I met Don, and I was with him until I was engaged to him when I ran into Beth, and I ran into Ellen. So I had been involved in physical activity, not intercourse. But that was, I was so innocent, uninformed, that at one point I thought I might be pregnant. And, well, the thing is, parents raise their kids you don't screw. They don't say that. You don't go to bed with boys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they never say.
What makes you pregnant?
They never say, but you mustn't go to bed with girls either. So there's absolutely no guilt in that. And also, there was no worry about pregnancy.
Uh-huh.
And that was...
Did you think that you were... This was finding who you really were?
Go ahead. Yeah. So, I moved... So, I lived with... I lived with Ricky.
Uh-huh.
I lived with Ricky for about 3 months. And she was... it wasn't a good relationship.
Uh-huh.
She wanted to use me. Uh-huh. She knew I took shorthand, so she decided she wanted to write her life story, and I should sit there every night and
oh, no, but
kids, right?
Uh-huh.
She was 21, I was 20 or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was kid stuff. Anyway, there's two other straight girls that I'd met at that party, and they found out where I lived. And they came to see me, and Mary Campbell was leaving where she lived, and she was getting an apartment. She wanted to know if I wanted to share it with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "But Mary, I'm gay." She said, "I know."
Huh. Did you use the term gay way back then?
Yeah.
That was the term people used. Huh?
She said, "That's okay." So Mary was 21 and I was 20, and we were both virgins, and I was gay. And at Christmas time, I'd worked for the same company for 3 months, and around Christmas time, they'd phased out 10 jobs. One of them was mine. And the president of the company, he was a general manager or some Lincoln thing. I liked his voice. He had a real deep voice. And I used to watch him, he used to watch me, and he used to give me rides home. And then I said to Mary Campbell, because we were both virgins, I said to her, "I'm going to sleep with Henry Byron." She said, "You're not." I said, "I am." And the day of the Christmas party, I knew I wouldn't see him anymore. I said to her, "Leave the bed down." Because we had a folding bed, okay? A couch thing. So we left the bed down. And... So he offered me a ride home. I said, "Would you like to come in for a drink?" I had him set up. Is this big deal? And also, too, that's another thing. Women were marketing their virginity. And I hated that.
What do you mean by marketing?
Parents teach their daughters to market you only to the man you're going to marry.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like that. I didn't believe in it. So, anyway, let's find out what this is all about. So Henry Byron came in. He put me on top. You got that? I mean, everybody knows it's a missionary position. When you're 20 years old and you have no way, it's the missionary. And I'm saying, what is this? It was funny. And anyway, he had a very small penis.
Huh.
So that made it even worse because it wasn't working. I mean, it was really, the whole thing was strange. And thank God I'd had a few drinks. And he'd had a few drinks.
So you got through.
And he had a prophylactic with him. So he was figuring he was going. But you know the only thing I felt badly about then? You know what I felt bad? That he was a Catholic. Mm. I really felt badly about that. He was a Catholic because I knew it was a sin for him. He was going to have to confess that. Isn't that funny?
So let's see. In 58, for a few years, for a year or so, you were just playing around. You didn't get into anything too serious or...
No.
But you liked being gay, and how you identified.
Mm-hmm.
And did people use the term lesbian too then in 58?
Not really. You mean the gay community? No. It was kind of a dirty word. It was a word where everyone was afraid of. Everyone was afraid of it. I mean, the word homosexual, men were afraid of the word homosexual. But if you were gay, it was just like a... It was almost like a foothold in the world of glamour.
Did you go to any bars that had a big lesbian population in Toronto?
They didn't have one. They had one bar that was, what we say, big lesbian population. It was one bar that had maybe 15 people. But they were hustlers and their pimps that were female. And that was an interesting...
There were female pimps and female women who was
hustle, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of them had... at least one that I knew of had a child.
So did a lot of Toronto lesbians come down to Buffalo at that period?
If they went to bars.
If they went?
The thing is, the people I knew didn't ram the roads, no.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't start that until I was about 21.
Mm-hmm. So how would you describe that period from 18 to 20? You were just kind of finding yourself?
Mm-hmm. I had a nice relationship with a Canadian actress, Pat Moffat. Everyone was about 7 years older than me, Liz.
Huh.
There was nobody my age. Everyone was 7 years older than me. And I had a nice relationship with Pat. Little theater and, you know, that sort of thing. Theatrical types. And then most of the men I met were professional men. And so I met window dressers and different kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was fun. It was creative. They were designers.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very nice. It was very, very nice.
And those friends that you had, were people into roles at that time?
Mm-hmm.
They were.
Huh? Oh, yeah, very much so.
And were you generally feminine and you went with more butch women, or wasn't that clear at that time?
No. The only butch woman I ever went with was Ruth.
So before that, you were more butch than the women you went with, or it was
no,
more...
No, it was just that the women that I went with... Pat Moffat didn't look butch. She had a label. She was a butch. As far as the community was concerned, she was a butch. But she didn't look butch. She was a pretty, pretty girl. And she couldn't afford to look butch in her profession.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? Ellen couldn't afford to look butch because she was an entertainer. Kay worked. Kay worked for another nice woman. Worked for the newspaper. She couldn't.
So how did these women get labeled as butch? What about
they
their
behavior?
They labeled, and what was their behavior that described them as that? Because that's always a big question that people ask, and we're trying to figure out is, you know, what defines butch and femme at different periods.
Oh, it was a lot of the sort of things, role playing that they would do, like lighting someone's cigarette, driving the car.
Uh huh.
Maybe not cooking or something. I don't know. Pat cooked. See, the women I knew all did those things.
They did, huh?
Yeah.
And what about in lovemaking? Was there any difference?
I don't think so, because I think I made love to everybody.
Mm-hmm. So already by 58...
I didn't make love to Alan, but I didn't know her too well. I never did get... And then she moved. You know, she was in engagement for, say, a month or 2 months in Toronto, and then she was off to God knows where. And we didn't...
And then at this period, did you come out to your parents yet or not?
No, I came out to my parents when I... Oh, well, my mother knew. My mother was over to the apartment where my mother didn't like the people I was hanging around with because there was gay men there that were very obviously feminine. Mm-hmm. And she was concerned about it. Mm-hmm. But she didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. She was hostile. She was hostile. At Christmas time, she didn't give me a Christmas present. She said she forgot. Well, you know, there's no blinking way that you could forget a present. She was angry that I had left home. And my dad, when I was leaving home, my father said, what's wrong? You have to leave home or something, sleep with men. And I said, Dad, if I want to sleep with men, I can sleep between 6 and 11. So then he was fine. And I left home and everything was fine. But then Christmas time didn't get a present. And I knew that, I knew she was angry. I knew, obviously.
But you didn't talk about it, the two of you, not
no,
then.
No. So then, when I was about 21. Yeah, when I was 21, I started coming down to Buffalo and I met someone who was involved with somebody else, involved living with somebody else. And so this other person and I started having a relationship. During the day when the other person had sat and even the other person was working, one of those things. But I liked those people very much. We all liked one another. In fact, people thought that we were having a menage a trois. Because we would be hugging and kissing in the carousel. And the other woman, like if someone came up to ask me to dance or something, and they'd say to Catherine, they'd say to me, can you dance? And I would like to dance, and Catherine would say, no. And she can't. And then the kid say, well, does she go with me? And Catherine would say, yes. And then she would turn to the other, you know, the lover, and she'd say, well, who does she go with? Well, she goes with me too. And we would just laugh. Mm-hmm. But I would never, if they didn't approve of, and the thing is, they both liked me so much that they never wanted me to tie up with another woman. In fact, when I did meet another woman, they were really mad.
What made you start coming down to Buffalo?
Al O'Connor, the gay man I worked with.
Where's the ice cream, love?
Up in the freezer, Mother.
I can't see it.
It's wrapped in silver. Yeah, so Al O'Connor had a car. And so he just said to me one time, how would you like to go to Buffalo this weekend? I said, sure. So we came down, and we had fun.
And you went, what bars
and
did you
I
go to?
And I went to the carousel, and he would go to Johnny 68 and 5 o'clock and stuff like that. We would have dinner at Santora's every Saturday night, Santora's pizza. And then we'd go back, shower, et cetera, et cetera. And then we'd go out to the bar.
Where would you stay?
We stayed, first of all, for the first month, we stayed in the Terrain.
Excuse me, the Andrudless.
And, so we stayed there maybe about the first month. We might have been down twice in that month. And then, a few other people that came from Rochester, we found out about the Genesee Hotel. And it was $5 a night. It was the same. It was $5 a night. And their kitchen was open all night. And it's super scrambled eggs and what have you, after the bars. So we stayed there. And Al would, well, he would, I would go to the carousel. I'd go to the bars, Johnny 68, 5 o'clock, and walk. Finally, I'd walk from the carousel over to 68. Along that street, I was, maybe because I was an out-of-towner, I didn't know enough to be afraid. So I just walk it. I was stomping around, go see what Al was doing, meet different people. People were moving around, and then he'd come back to the carousel.
Would you go to Bingo's too at that time, or was it closed?
I didn't know it.
It might have been closed by then. We're not sure quite when it closed. Were there any other lesbian boys at that time?
No.
Just the carousel.
There was bars in Rochester. But we didn't go down there. And then the thing is, I became friends with Catherine and Leslie. And
did you meet them at the carousel?
Yeah. I stood and just stared at Leslie. She was beautiful. And then Catherine came up and introduced herself to me, and would I like to join them? So then they, well, Leslie knows now. Leslie knows that I had an affair with Catherine. Anyway, then, so she invited me to join them, and then I got to know Catherine, first of all, and then I would see them, and then they said, would you like to come to the house and stay? Why don't you come to the house and stay? So they had a guest room, so I stayed there on weekends.
And so then you would come every weekend, huh, for a while?
Yeah.
Were you still working at this job that you had? No.
I was still in Toronto.
You were still in Toronto.
I was with Arthur Murray's. That was another interesting development in life. I had met a gay woman who had been Sandy's. I went with Sandy Mitchell in Toronto.
Uh-huh. This was after Pat? Before Pat?
Oh, Pat, after Pat Moffat, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I met Sandy, and Sandy was a model, and she had taught in Arthur Murray's in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to tell me stories about working there, and it was so much fun. The stories were super stories. So I went to Europe, Scotland, with my mother. 58.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had quit my job in Toronto, and when I came back, I was in Letros, and I was over this thing with Sandy. Sandy was going with someone else. And I ran into Sandy. She said, what are you going to do? I said, I will do anything, but I'm not going back in an office.
Mm-hmm.
She said, why don't you come up to Murray's?
And so that's how you did.
So I went to Murray's, and I met Al O'Connor, and I was there for 3 years. Two years of Beavers and Murray's.
And was that, you stayed there until you left Toronto?
Uh-huh. Until I came down to Liverpool.
So you worked there, that was a long time.
Yeah, 2 years.
Were there other gay women working there?
Well, Sandy was there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what did you all do, teach dancing?
Yeah. But the thing is, I had a lot of straight friends because we were a community in the studio because we worked from 1 till 10. So then afterwards, we'd socialize together. We'd talk about business and stuff like that. And then the bars closed by 1. So, actually, closed by 12, but we could go for somewhere else and have a sandwich and then drink to 1. So I would have maybe 2 beer a night. And I had straight friends, and we had a great, and they knew the score, because Sandy, of course all the men, they were all in their 20s and stuff, any new woman was always interesting, and they just said, hey, she's cute, because in the studio, like the theater, people don't care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, in this period, when you were just coming out and things like that, did you get nervous about your future? Ever did you think what would it be like to be gay for your life, or you never thought like that?
No, when I was in the studio, I thought, well, if you decide you don't like it, you can always change. Mm-hmm. You can always get married. Go ahead.
Did you know any older gay women who had been gay
there
for?
There was another. There was an older woman in the studio, right?
Uh-huh.
Lisa, and Lisa was about.
Oh,
she was about 50, and she taught me something about a menopause. Lisa was always impeccably groomed. She was like a social director. Impeccably groomed. And I started to flirt with her for some reason, because she was a woman, I suppose. And so she and I started to have a relationship. This was just before I met Skip. Or I had met Skip, but I'd known her only to talk to her. Uh-huh. I hadn't slept with her. And then, so anyway, Lisa and I started seeing one another. And she was going through the menopause. And she would never, she would break out in a perspiration all over. She'd on these lovely pastel clothes. And if anyone would say, well, I guess if I would say, she would say something about it. She'd say, ignore me, because it will go away. And then she told me about a woman she'd been involved with when she went through the menopause. She drove everyone crazy. And Lisa said, I decided that when I went through the menopause, I would not let it change me. So I know when I go through it, at least that physical part, see if I start sweating or something, not a chance. I mean, not a chance that I'm going to be upset. Mm-hmm. It's life, it's part of your body. People understand, you know, it's...
Did you think when you met Lisa that her life was good, so that it would be all right to be gay?
Oh, sure.
For your life? That's how, mm-hmm. did you think?
Yeah, because if I was in the studio then, and I was with Al O'Connor, we had talked about getting married, there was, as it turned out, I had a lot of potential. So, I wasn't too concerned, because in Murray's, Lisa was in her 50s. Huh. You could be 60 and you could be managed, you could own your own studio. There's all kinds of stuff. Murray's is a very, very democratic company, by the way, Arthur Murray's.
Huh.
Way back then. Super, super company.
Huh. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
Was Lisa lonely in her old age, or you didn't feel that at all either?
When she, what do you mean old
50,
age?
50, as she was 50.
Hell, 50
she,
is an old
she
age.
She isn't old, even though I'm 40, I shouldn't
no,
know. But I mean as she was aging.
Was she lonely?
Or did you never think of that?
No, I didn't think she was lonely. She had a full life.
Okay, so we got that. Now you're coming to Buffalo, just because Al was interested in coming. And how long did you met these people, Kathy and Leslie, right? Mm-hmm. And you hung out with them.
And they introduced me. Okay, so they...